Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it! It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Coming up on the show, we talk to Tyson Slocum of Public Citizens Energy Program. But first, as always, it's time to hear from Stacy and get some background on all this.
Max, we're talking to Tyson Slocum, so we're going to talk about fracking because that is the big story. Of course, we are now exporting molecules of U.S. freedom now that we have expanded our LNG capacity to export. And that was in the news this past week or two, a gusher of red ink for U.S. shale, another gusher of red ink, the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis, along with Sightline Institute, wrote in a joint report on the first quarter earnings of the shale industry. The report studied 29 North American shale companies and found a combined $2.5 billion in negative free cash flow in the first quarter. This was a deterioration from the fourth quarter of 2018. And they note that this dismal cash flow actually came despite a 16% quarter over quarter decline in capital expenditures. We all know that the fracking industry is indeed getting more and more efficient, and yet they're still losing money.
Right. Well, why should fracking be any different than a lot of these companies going public these days, like Uber or others that are losing record amounts of money? Why should it be any different than the sovereign bond market, $12 trillion outstanding, guaranteed to lose money? They're sold with a negative interest rate. Fracking, it takes more energy to go into the wells than comes out of the wells, takes more money that goes in than you come out. It's a guaranteed loser. And so why not? I mean, we're entering into the other side of the looking glass. This is the Red Queen syndrome on steroids. We can't go faster and faster to stay in place. Meanwhile, the war drums are beating because, of course, energy is the primary commodity of the world, and empires rise and fall because of it. People go to war over it, and we're playing games.
Well, in the meantime, despite all the success, of course, America is the largest producer of oil and energy products, including natural gas. And yet, the 29 companies surveyed by IEEFA burned through a combined $184 billion between 2010 and 2019. They're hemorrhaging cash every single year. So I want to turn to our guest now. He's an expert in this field, so he's the best person to talk to. His name is Tyson Slocum. Tyson runs the Public Citizens Energy Program and serves on the CFTC Energy Committee. Tyson, why are investors losing $184 billion over 10 years and continuing to invest in the fracking sector?
Well, I think that the sort of hysteria and promotion of fracking has less to do with it as a legitimate business enterprise and more as sort of a unit of economic development. Government has really staked a lot on promoting fracking as a key engine of economic growth and job creation. So when you look at, you know, the fracking process, there's a ton of investment that goes in and not a lot of great return. And so I think the government is looking at that investment as saying this is the type of economic development program that we want to stake our claim on, despite the fact that if you really want to look at what the best value is for the environment, the climate, and for consumers, it's renewable energy. Renewable energy is either cost competitive or the least cost option in most U.S. power markets. We've got a lot of challenges on the transportation side to get off of our addiction to oil. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the Trump administration has been promoting fracking as sort of the foundation of its absurd energy dominance mantra. But we do have to remember that this energy dominance mantra got its start in the Obama administration, that fracking really found its sea legs under the Obama administration. The Obama administration embraced natural gas fracking as a centerpiece of its climate and energy strategies. And it was Obama that negotiated the 2015 repeal of the de facto oil export ban. And so as a result of those Obama administration initiatives that Trump now takes credit for, the United States is now exporting significant amounts of the fracked natural gas and oil that we're producing. Last year, the United States exported over a trillion cubic feet of liquefied natural gas, and we're currently exporting 1.2 million barrels of oil every day, and that doesn't include the more than 3.4 million barrels of refined petroleum products every day. So this is just a massive industry that has incredible political influence. The oil industry has so much accumulated financial capital, but they also have unbelievable accumulated political capital. And it's reflected in what I think is the most powerful interest group in the United States today, the American Petroleum Institute. This is the trade association for all of the major oil and natural gas frackers. And the American Petroleum Institute is by far the most influential and powerful lobbying group in the United States today.
Oh, I'm crying. I'm just crying. I'm crying big tears as a taxpayer, because what we're saying here is that the government knows this is a money-losing operation, but they create the jobs because it's a vote-getter. It's like a make-work program like FDR did, except instead of building roads and bridges, they're just committing a hellacious eco-holocaust with my tax money. And then take it a step further, they are, of course, justifying this as some kind of freedom molecules using propaganda against me at the same time. It makes me want to vomit.
And, you know, for people living near these wells, they usually are actually vomiting from the air pollution and all of the dust and sand that is blowing all over the place, because sand is such a primary ingredient in the fracking cocktails. But yeah, the environmental implications of fracking are enormous. Not only do you have issues of abandoned wells all over the place, state laws require minimal financial obligations by frackers to deal with reclaiming the environment after they abandon the well. And so as a result, there are thousands and thousands of abandoned wells from fracking that now are the financial responsibility of the American taxpayer to deal with. And on top of that, you also have enormous amounts of flaring of natural gas. So what happens, particularly in the Bakken and Permian Basin formations, the Bakken is up in North Dakota, the Permian is in Texas and New Mexico. So the oil industry has focused all their attention on getting the oil out of those formations to market. But there's also a heck of a lot of natural gas that is produced simultaneously, but the industry hasn't invested any money in takeaway capacity to move that natural gas from production to get it into the market. So instead, they just flare it. They just burn it off at the wellhead. A unit of the World Bank, it's a group called the Global Gas Flaring Reduction Partnership, just estimated that there's been a 48% increase in gas flaring in the United States from a year ago to now. So we are burning more natural gas than is consumed in all of Central and South America. So that is an environmental catastrophe right there. We're just burning off that gas, creating massive methane emissions that's contributing to global warming, all because the oil industry couldn't be bothered to deal with the issue.
So let's talk about, you brought up the consumers, and the largest consumer of energy products in the world is China. China, however, is, I believe, investing a lot in renewable energies. Can you put that into context of the global demand for all of this supply coming on, and whether or not China will go down a path of renewable energy rather than continuing to buy all this LNG and oil products available?
Yeah, I mean, I think China is in a situation where they are resource constrained. They have a massive country, they have a very large economy, and they cannot possibly ever produce enough fossil fuels to meet their domestic needs. So China is pursuing renewable energy, not because they think it's the right thing to do, but out of necessity, right? Because they understand that if all of these upcoming drivers in China drive internal combustion engine vehicles, China's doomed. they will not be able to access affordable oil supplies. So that's why they are the leaders in investing in electric vehicles and importantly in electric buses, right? So they're not just looking at individual electric vehicles. They're looking at mass transit electrification. Same with renewable energy. I mean, still today, 70% of China's electricity is generated from coal, but they are moving at a pretty accelerated rate to reduce that dependency on coal, and it's being driven by investments in renewable energy that really dwarf what we're doing in the United States.
Yeah, amazing that those numbers just point to an unbelievable irresponsible activity here in the U.S. And so moving right along here, the cost of renewables just keeps going down and down, right? So what are the latest numbers?
The latest numbers are incredible. There was a large utility operating in the Midwest of the United States called Xcel Energy. And they did several months ago a request for proposals in Colorado to meet their distribution utilities energy needs. The request for proposals came back the cheapest by far was wind paired with storage. And so these types of trends are now becoming commonplace. You've got at most hours of the day in California, up to 70% of all of the electricity being created from wind and solar. And that's without widely available energy storage options. But when you look at the cost trend for storing renewable energy, which is going to be key, because the one knock against renewables is, sure, it's cheaper than coal and natural gas and nuclear, but it's intermittent, meaning the sun doesn't shine 24 hours a day, the wind doesn't blow consistently. So the key to make renewables work is to store that energy at peak times and then rely on that stored energy in large battery systems to even out that intermittency. And we're starting to see a number of states develop big storage energy targets. And that's what we saw in the renewable energy space 15 years ago, that when states design these targets, the market follows through. And so this is the big challenge. Energy requires a lot of infrastructure development, but the oil and gas industry has been actively fighting it because for them, they're the legacy industry. They need to keep Americans and as much of the world as possible hooked on their product so that they can milk whatever capital investment they've made. And so this is the constant tension in U.S. politics, is the superior economics and environmental profile of renewables versus the entrenched political influence of the oil and gas industry.
Right. And we have another minute left. And I want to ask you about building out a new infrastructure, because Trump's policies are to protect jobs in the coal industry. And the jobs in the fracking industry are indeed quite high paying. There's something like $125,000 annual average salary there. So what about the jobs available if, like, we were to mimic China in terms of the renewable energy spend? How many jobs would be needed in America? What sort of jobs available?
It is absolutely true that the oil and gas sector pays extraordinarily well, better than the clean tech. But there are way more jobs available, particularly when you start looking at installations of what's known as distributed energy systems. This is smaller scale, mainly solar systems. So like commercial rooftop solar, you know, deck out your local Walmart with a massive solar installation, but also energy efficiency retrofits. So this is one of the big economic development opportunities in the United States, is how to make existing building stock more energy efficient. And there are tons of good job opportunities on weatherization and efficiency retrofits for energy efficiency. And so, but again, this is going to take infrastructure investment commitments. And that's something that I don't see a lot of political support for because of the financial cost. You're going to have some sort of federal initiative to finance this. And there isn't a whole lot of consensus on how to finance these needed clean energy infrastructure investments.
Yeah, you new graduates, get into renewables. This is like the scene from The Graduate. Replace plastics with wind. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. I'd like to thank our guest, Tyson Slocum of Public Citizens Energy Program. Until next week, bye, y'all.